You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we talk with the director of a group helping to resettle refugees in the Fox Valley area. She shares how their work has changed amid changes in refugee policy, travel bans, and a decreasing number of arrivals. Right now, people around the country avoid going to the dentist for many reasons. Some afraid to do it. Others can't afford treatment. While some people think that seeing the dentist is less important than seeing their doctor, but oral care can be crucial to people's overall health, and costs often prevent people from going to the dentist. Dr. Pradeep Bhagavatula joins us now. He's a dentist and faculty researcher at the Marquette University School of Dentistry. Dr. Bhagavatula, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, I think a lot of times people think of their health over here and then their dental health as something different. Can you talk about the connection between what's going on in our mouths and our overall health?
Mouth is certainly an important part of the body. I mean, we talk using the apparatus in our mouth, we eat, we smile. So it's really a central part of the body. Oral health has traditionally been looked upon as being something separate from general health. That's something unfortunate, because there is enough research that shows that long-term there are some problematic effects because of poor oral health, that is heart disease and pregnancy outcomes, diabetes, and all of these chronic diseases have been linked to poor oral health. And not only that, poor oral health can have some immediate effects like pain, which can give people sleepless nights, inability to eat or inability to talk, etc., can occur because of toothache, loss of teeth again. If you have gum problems and if your teeth are pulled, then you will have problems eating. So there are both short-term immediate effects like pain or swelling and fever and infections, etc. But then there are also long-term effects because of poor oral health. Because, for example, gum disease, which is just inflammation around the gums of the tooth, is chronic inflammation. And that inflammation can lead to, it's been proven in some studies, or it's not been proven, but it has been associated with heart disease, because it's gum inflammation is chronic inflammation. And the current state of science says that if you have chronic inflammation in one part of the body, that can lead to some cascading effects that would lead to heart disease, or that can at least increase the risk of heart disease. Then diabetes, there is almost a bidirectional relationship with gum disease, that is, people who have higher levels of gum disease can have serious problems with their diabetes or maintaining their sugar levels, and other way around as well. So people who have diabetes are more prone to having gum disease. And there are many studies that have looked at effects of gum disease on pregnancy outcomes. So women who have periodontal diseases are more likely to have low birth weight infants, or they're low, or even have adverse pregnancy outcomes. So Long story short, we have both short-term and long-term effects because of poor oral health.
There's been worry about people not having access to dental health care, and I wonder, a lot of the problems you talk about sound like things that are probably treatable, maybe even easily treatable, if people have access to routine dental health appointments. How much of a difference does it make if people don't have that access and don't get these problems diagnosed right away?
Most dental disease is preventable in most people. Okay, I don't say it's preventable in everyone, but for if some individuals take some simple steps like eating right, then brushing their teeth regularly, we can prevent most of the dental disease. And if people have good access to dental care and they're seeing their dentist, and that message gets reinforced by the dentist, and the dentist provides adequate preventive services, we have a lot of things in our armamentarium these days to prevent dental caries. We apply something called fluoride varnish, which is very effective in preventing dental caries. Among children, we can put water called dental sealants. Those things can prevent decay. So if people have good access to dental care, it's both gives them the ability to get some procedures done, as well as some reinforcing information that can actually improve their knowledge about and their ability to take care of their oral health. So access to dental care is really, really important. And if people who have or visit dentists regularly are less likely to develop dental caries. So I think it is very important to have access to dental care.
So if, as you were saying, bad dental care can lead to long-term effects like heart disease and diabetes, plus the mm-hmm. obvious short-term problems, and a lot of these things are routinely treatable, not all, but most, mm-hmm. or preventable even, why mm-hmm. don't we talk more about oral health, about dental care, when we're talking about overall health care?
That is, again, unfortunate. Medicine got separated from dentistry a long time ago, and dentistry or dental health has always taken a back burner. For most people, it was almost a fact of life that they would lose teeth, and this has gone on for many generations. So lack of awareness about the importance of oral health. I think most people, just like it's a matter of, like I said, it's a fact of life that, you lose teeth, and it is okay if you lose teeth. We can just live with what we have, kind of an attitude still is prevalent, though I think it is going down these days. I think that's lack of, perceived need or perceived importance of oral health is what causes that neglect of oral health.
Dr. Pradeep Begavatula is with us now. He's a dentist and faculty researcher at Marquette University's School of Dentistry. And Dr. Begavatula, let's talk about your experience providing dental care in Wisconsin. What do you see in your patients that gets you worried, that keeps you up at night?
Here at the dental school, we generally treat mostly patients who are on Medicaid, so they do have some significant oral health problems. We are fortunate that we are able to provide care. Marquette is the largest Medicaid provider in the state of Wisconsin, and with our students and faculty providers, we do provide services to a lot of patients here in Wisconsin. Then we also have our students going out to some rural outreach clinics where we provide care. Also, we have two separate clinics here in the city of Milwaukee where we generally serve underserved populations. To be very honest and upfront, I'm not worried about the patients that I see rather than the patients that we don't or ever get to see. There are a lot of people out there who don't have an opportunity to get into a dental office, who have a lot of untreated disease, who end up going to emergency rooms to get even routine dental care or to stave off some infection, etc. We do have high levels of disease among the patients we see here. Again, there are some patients who don't have fluoride in their well water, who don't have, especially we see patients here in Milwaukee who don't have good access to proper healthy foods that can be helpful in help people in not getting cavities. And if you have good fresh vegetables, etc., rather than eating some high sugar, high calorie beverages, that will help you in not getting cavities. So that's one of the things that I'm concerned about, the social indicators, that there is so much disparity. We see so many patients who don't have proper access to dental care, proper access to grocery stores, etc. That's my main concern with the patients in general that we see and those we do not even see here in our school.
What needs to happen in terms of outreach to those patients? As you say, the patients you don't see who don't get any medical treatment, even when it's late in the game, any dental treatment.
Mm-hmm. I am glad that things in some ways are moving in a positive direction. The state of Wisconsin has started a pilot project where they are increasing the reimbursement rates for dentists in 4 counties in Wisconsin. So to see if that will help in improving access to dental care among people who are living in those counties. And the idea behind that is I'm hoping that if that is experiment is successful, they would probably extend it to the whole state. And if we have higher reimbursement rates, I'm hoping that more dentists would be likely to treat patients who are on Medicaid. And that would be really helpful in improving access and the overall oral health of individuals in the state of Wisconsin.
And then for those things you mentioned that aren't directly related to dental care but have a huge impact, the access to better foods, for example. I mean, is that, do you think it's the role of dentists to help make that kind of thing a reality?
Now, I think we are citizens of the community, and dentists are generally, by and large, very good citizens of their communities. I think if everyone bands together and tries to advocate for changes that can help in improving access to grocery stores, etc., that will be a very good thing. I think there are some small initiatives here that are happening in Milwaukee. Some dentists have been involved in some of those clinics providing direct care or being champions for improving access to care in those communities. I think if that becomes a widespread norm, I think it's going to be really helpful in getting the oral health of quality of oral health of people here in Wisconsin up.
Dr. Bhagavatula, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Pradeep Bhagavatula is a dentist and associate professor at Marquette University. He joined us to talk about the importance of dental care and make the case for better access for people around the state. Immigration policy has been front and center for the Trump administration. The president has signed two executive orders restricting travel from some Middle Eastern countries, which included temporary refugee bans. Both are currently blocked by federal courts, but the number of refugees entering the United States has dropped significantly. World Relief Fox Valley is a faith-based organization that helps refugee families from around the world settle in the Appleton and Oshkosh area. Ongoing debate over the vetting of refugees has challenged the group, leading to changes in staffing and the number of people they've resettled. Tammy McLaughlin is with us now. She's the office director of World Relief Fox Valley. Tammy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Before we get into what's changed over the last few months, can you just give us a little background about the kind of things you do at World Relief to work with families that are settling in Wisconsin?
Sure. World Relief Fox Valley opened in 2012, and we started resettling refugees in Oshkosh. Several years later, we expanded into the Appleton community also. So we're resettling refugees in both Appleton and Oshkosh. And we contract with the Department of State. It's called the Reception and Placement Contract. It's very formal and very outlined and tells us exactly what we need to do as we resettle refugees. So when we receive notice, their airline confirmation that they're going to arrive in Appleton, we go into high gear and secure apartments, furnish those apartments. We get them registered for schools, for Social Security, for benefits, adults in English classes. We provide orientations. We work really, really hard at getting them situated and stabilized so they can really start to thrive and do well in our communities.
So you've actually been there when they get off the plane. What's that first moment like?
Oh, we meet them when they arrive. That's part of the requirement of resettling refugees is you have to be at the airport. And it's wonderful for them often. You know, we can see who they are. They have a bag that says International Order of Migration. So it's an IOM bag, so we recognize them right away. Oftentimes they're looking around like, oh my gosh, who am I or where am I really? And especially when they arrive in the middle of winter with lots and lots of snow. So, yes, it's a wonderful feeling for us just to know that, we're receiving them and starting them on a new life that will provide hopefully hope and opportunity and a much better way of life than what they had come from.
Under the current system, well, up until, say, last year, what was the process that a refugee went through before that moment on the plane? What did they go through to get to that moment?
Oh, goodness. When they flee their country, refugees have had to fled their country for fear of persecution, war, or violence. So they fled their country because of awful, awful circumstances. Then they register with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, who is the UNHCR, and they determine, yes, they are a refugee and deem them that status. The UNHCR then works with that person to determine if they would be a good candidate for resettlement, and that's what we do in the United States is resettlement. If they determine that in our United States, Department of State says, yes, let's start that process, and the refugees go through a process that takes 18 months up to 3 years, and it's a security process. It includes interviews, background checks, biometric checks. It involves the FBI, Department of State, Homeland Security, a variety of organizations and bureaus that will say, yes, they are secure. We know who they are. They will not be a threat to our country, and we will welcome them into our country. So it's a process that also the final determination is given by our Department of State on whether we will receive them or not, if they pass through that long security process.
Now, early in his administration, President Trump signed one and then another executive order on immigration and included bans, 120-day bans on refugees traveling to America. These are tied up in the court. This is hot news that we're watching, of course. What has changed for you, though, since this has happened?
Just a lot of uncertainty. President Obama determined that we were going to resettle 110,000 refugees when we started our fiscal year October 1st, and we were on pace for that. So there's 9 organizations representing over 300 offices across the United States. We were all really busy resettling refugees. We thought our country would receive 110,000. President Trump, as part of that executive order, lowered that ceiling to 50,000. So that in itself caused a lot of change, because it was a 50% reduction of how many refugees we were going to receive. So we had to lay off staff. Several of our offices in the World Relief Network closed, and that, I think, was consistent throughout the resettlement agency, all of the agencies themselves. So because of that determination, that certainly had a big effect. And then, you know, just with the travel bans and everything being held up in court, it's been somewhat inconsistent in the news that we've been getting and just in terms of the flow of refugees that we've been getting. So we just take it day by day and are willing to receive any of the refugees that have been deemed for Central Wisconsin or for Fox Valley, Wisconsin. And again, you know, just are hopeful and optimistic that this program will continue. We believe in it. And just resettle whoever comes and attempting to do it well.
So even with the so-called travel ban hung up in courts, because the administration changed that target number for refugees, lowered it a lot, that's definitely having an impact right away.
That had a pretty extreme, impact right away in January. And throughout February, we made those difficult decisions about how many offices would be closed and how many staff we would have to reduce. And we noticed a big decline in arrivals. Now, we are starting to see somewhat of a bump in arrivals. So, you know, again, we're not really sure what that means because there's so much tied up in court. But we're thankful, you know, because we do like to resettle refugees. That's our heart and our desire. So even though we went through somewhat of a decline in the slow couple of months, we use that time in our office to try and strengthen some of our programs. We rely heavily on community partnerships and volunteers, so we're really taking a look at those and how can we better those. We provide immigration services, and we're at capacity with those that are one person doing that. So how can we expand that? So we have used that time to look internally and say, okay, how can we strengthen our services in this time? But now, again, we're starting to see some refugees arrival. So we're attempting to do both at the same time, which is okay.
We're talking to Tammy McLaughlin from World Relief Fox Valley about refugee resettlement in Wisconsin, in her area, how it's affected by federal policy. Tammy, refugees were controversial through the presidential race and beyond since the aftermath. What are you hearing from people in your community in the Fox Valley area about their attitude toward refugees coming and living, being their neighbors, basically?
We have great supporters, and when, you know, you go through a time where there's a lot of controversy, you definitely know who your supporters are. We haven't had as many, negative or anti-refugee people come forward, so we feel very, very thankful for that. We feel that that's why we are a good community, because we have good community partnerships and the volunteers who support us do so in a really great and wonderful way. So we try, and we do believe that everybody has a right to an opinion, you know, but a lot of times the opinions that, especially that are negative opinions, don't understand who refugees are, why they're here, the process that they go through. So we really try and keep lines of communication open and talk to anybody who wants to ask us questions. We like to do a lot of public speaking when asked. Again, we believe education and knowledge, are the best tools and the best resources in times like this when there's so much controversy. So we've tried to step up our place and presence in the community with education and awareness.
I assume refugee resettlement is not a lucrative line of work. What motivates you to do this work and obviously have this enthusiasm and excitement for it?
Well, I feel it's part of who we are as a nation, you know, just to welcome nations and especially people who are living in such chaotic and traumatic circumstances. I love these people. So does my staff. You know, we believe that they have something to contribute to our country. When you get to know refugees as people, first of all, you realize that they are the same as us in so many respects. They also are resilient. They've had to persevere through such traumatic circumstances. They have a different value of community than we do and a time than we do. And I think that sometimes they have things to teach us that maybe we as Americans have lost value of. So I feel, again, that they're people who have as much to offer us as we have to offer them as we go and walk through this time together and these seasons together.
Briefly, as we wrap up, is there something you wish more people knew about refugees coming to Wisconsin?
Again, just that they have so much to contribute to our culture, to our communities. You know, they're hard workers. They want to do well. They're smart, intelligent people who've gone through a lot of trauma, and they make us better. And so if you have the opportunity to welcome a refugee, to get involved in a refugee, if you're interested, please just follow us on Facebook, follow our website, and there will be opportunities coming up. And if you don't, you're just not sure, let us know also, because we'd love to just sit down and chat with you and talk to you about what this really is and who they are and you know, get knowledge and educated about refugees and refugee resettlement.
Tammy, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for all you do. Appreciate your interest in us.
That was Tammy McLaughlin, Office Director of World Relief Fox Valley, a faith-based organization helping to resettle refugees in Wisconsin.